by singing this Ashtakam and learning this Ashtakam about the six Goswamis, we get the drafting effect. In racing, in road racing, there's what's called drafting. Sometimes bicyclists who go long distance, and even they're competing against each other, they're so far ahead of everyone else, one will take the lead for a while and the other will stay behind because the wind gets cut when you stay behind. And it takes much less effort to move ahead. And there's also an effect by association. When you're around somebody that's moving at a particular pace, it's much easier to move along at that pace also by association. We notice at Govardhan Hill. Also, you know, at Govardhan Hill, there are sadhus that go around once a day, sometimes twice a day, every single day. That's their whole practice, is going around Govardhan Hill. And I noticed they go really fast, and they actually compete against each other. It's unspoken. It's not like there's an award at the end or anything like that. But I know there was, anyway, there's a lot of competition. But going around once a day, it's a difficult thing. It's 14 miles walking around the hill. And I noticed myself, we go out to walk around Govardhan Hill, and sometimes feeling tired or uninspired at that particular day, then if one of these sadhus who goes around all the time comes by, we call it catching a flyer. As soon as he's there, we get behind him. And I just turn off my mind and just say, I'm just following. Whatever he does, I'll do. And sometimes it's dark and you can't see where you're walking, and you know, if you're barefooted, then it, you know, can hurt. So then also I don't have to think about where I'm stepping because he's already stepping there. So I just follow right behind. So you get this drafting effect. You also get the enthusiasm. Someone else already has the momentum, so you're right behind. Yes. Flock of geese. Yeah, they cut into that formation, definitely. It depends. Depends how fast you go. But sometimes it takes generally about 5 hours. Some people do it in 3. Some people do it in 8 or 10. And, you know, oh, is that right? Then we should get some special outfit for the parikram. We can market that. My point is that actually the Goswamis are transcendental personalities. And if we enter into this prayer, the Shad Goswami Ashtakam, and hear about them and their method, we get the effect of drafting, we get their association, which creates the momentum. And where they step, we don't have to think about it. We just go behind. Bejare moniyota gre bhagavan tamadhoksajam satvam bishudam shemaya kalpante yenutaniha. Bhagavatam says, follow the sages. They did it previously. They know how to do it. If you follow them, you'll be eligible for the same result. Even if you're not a sadhu or a sage, if you follow the sadhus and sages, you get counted as the same. That's the benefit of following. So this Anu, or following the six Goswamis, we are called Rupanugas, or specifically, we're followers of Rupa Goswami, who is the head of the six Goswamis, and who is very dear to Lord Chaitanya and also empowered by him. So I'm saying we need this. You have to have this to move ahead in spiritual life. You have to have saints. You have to have acharyas. You have to have an example. And we can get that example through the Shastra, and also there are modern-day examples. We should connect and have the same kind of effect of drafting and association with somebody that's here now. There's a devotee in Denver, Colorado. Her name is Nidra, a Mother Nidra. Yeah, Nidra has been there steadily doing service. There's so many unsung heroes around the world that I know of in ISKCON. So she's been doing there steadily. She has this practice that she goes on book distribution every day, no matter what. Even if it's for 15 minutes, she'll go up. But she never misses a day and never has missed a day. And she's there in the temple. The devotees, were reminding me of some of her character. I knew her because I lived in Denver Temple for a while, and she was there 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and she's always equipoised. You know, Rakshit Prabhu, we talk about being equipoised. You're asking that question. She's a good example. No matter what's happening, she's always equipoised and happy. And there's a younger devotee in that temple. Her name's Terry. And she had really taken shelter of Mother Nidra. And so the devotees were telling me just about how, what a beneficial relationship with that was. A steady devotee, and then you just hook up and say, I'm just following you. Wherever you go, I go. Whatever you do, I do. Whatever you eat, I eat. That's if you check it out first and you make sure that you're following the right person, you're hooked up in the right way, then you get this drafting effect. You get the momentum effect. And you also get great encouragement. And there's something that you get from another person that's there with you live that you don't get anywhere else. I mean, the book, that's one aspect of it. It's a passive agent, though. It's there, and you can feel it. If you sit down and you read and enter into the book, you'll feel that the Lord and his associates are helping you through the book. But it's called the passive agent, whereas you can also have an active agent who can help you, someone who's also imbibed the book, who's going at that speed. And if you hook up with that person, then there's something that that person can do that the book can't do, and that is come get you. You come call to you, correct you when you made a mistake, or exalt you when you're doing it right. There's something that is especially gratifying and fortifying by that personal kind of association. So that's there in spiritual life. So all of these things we can take advantage of to make solid advancement and come to this stage of steadiness in devotional service where we'll actually feel satisfaction and we'll be protected from the onslaught of material nature, which is, it's a difficult thing to overcome, Krishna says. Daiva hi yesha gunamayi mamamaya durayaya. Just think about this world, durayaya. The word dur, you know, it's in a lot of things that mean difficult. It's even into the English language. And difficult is, at every step, the material world is very difficult to overcome. It's difficult to move anywhere. Now India has made this policy that if you have a 10-year tourist visa, once you go to India, then in order to renew the visa, you have to leave the country for 2 months. Everyone's up in arms. The English and all the foreign nationals who are in India are just beside themselves. It ruins everything. It's very difficult to go and come from India now. These things happen all the time in this world that make it difficult for us to go anywhere and move in this world. Therefore, this world's called Durga. It means difficult to go. So the only shelter is to take the process of devotional service and follow the footsteps of the great devotees. Then our path will become easy. Kaviraj Goswami, in writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, was speaking about how he was so old that he could die at any minute. He was elderly, and he was infirm. And he said, you know, my teeth are falling out. I could die at any second. So he said, I take the mercy stick of the association of the devotees to support myself and walk forward. So that's necessary. You have to have that in spiritual life. You have to have the mercy stick of the association of devotees, both as they come to us in the written form, and also we have to align ourselves properly in this world too. Prabhupada used to tell us, he formed these temples as a society, really, so we could have that. And he said, if you think you can make advancement outside of the association of devotees, then you're hallucinating. So, six Goswamis, and then let's hear the verses from this book. Because he was, do you know the exact age he was when he was, Mahaprabhu told him that you could, 74 years. So we hear, you know, at the Radha-Damodar temple in Vrindavan, there's a Shila that has Krishna's footprint in it. And the story goes that Krishna told him that, you know, you're getting elderly now, you can stop going around the hill. And so he made this special shila so that he could just go around the shila four times. And by that, it would count it as one parikram of Govardhan. So now everyone goes to Radha-Damodar and they go around four times. It's a big deal. Especially in Kartik, it's jammed in there to get around. Okay, so let's hear the verses. Does everyone have a nectar of instruction? We'll sing the Sanskrit and then read the English aloud and go through that way in all 11 verses. Vacho vegam manasakrodha vegam jihva vegam udarapasta vegam etan vegam yo vishaheta dhira sarvamapimam prithivim sashishyad. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Text number 2. Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamagraha janashangascha lalyamcha shadbhir bhaktir vinashyati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. Text 3. Utsahan nishchayat dharyat tatat karma pravartanat sangatyagat satovrite shadbhir bhakti prasidyati. There are 6 principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. 1. Being enthusiastic. 2. Endeavoring with confidence. 3. Being patient. 4. Acting according to regulative principles such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, chanting and remembering Krishna. 5. Abandoning the association of non-devotees. And 6. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These 6 principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. Text number 4. Dadati pratigrinati kuhyam akyati pritshiti bhumte bojayate chaiva shadvidham pritilakshanam. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the 6 symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Text number 5. Krishneti yasya giritam manasa driyeta dikshasti chet pranati bhishcha bhajanta bhisham shushushaya bhajana vignam ananyamanya nindari shunya hridimipsita sanga labhya. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshiping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Text 6. Drishtai sobhava janitar vapushascha doshayar na prakritatvam iha bhaktya janasya pashyet gangam nasam na kalubhud buddha pena pankayar brahmadravapvam apagachati nir adharmai. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. According to ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. But despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges waters do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. Text 7. Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Sitapti Vidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintva Varat Anudilam Kalusaiva Jushta Svadvi Kramad Bhavati Tad Gadamu Lahantri. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, the natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. Text 8. Tanama rupa charitadi sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyojya tishtam vrajeta daduragi chananugami kalam nayet akilam ityupadesha saram. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, and nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, Goloka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. Text number 9. Vaikuntach janito vara marupurita trapi ratsotsavad Vrindaranyam udara pani ramana tatrapi govardhanaha Radha kundamiha api gokalapate primam ritap lavanat Kuryarasya virajato giritate sevam vivekinakaha. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathura Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radhakund stands supreme, for it is over flooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? Text number 10. Karmi bhya parito hare priyataya vyaktim yayur jnaninas tebhyo jnana vimukta bhakti parama premaika nishtastata Tebhyastha Pashupala Pankajadrishastha Bhyopi Sararika Prishtha Tadvad Iyam Tadiya Sarasi Tamnashayatka Kriti. In the Shastra, it is said that of all types of fruit of workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her Kund lake is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as is most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, a prakrita bhava, render loving service to divine couple Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Ashtaka Lila Lila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radha Kunda are the most fortunate people in the universe. Text 11. Krishnas yo chai pranaya vasati priyasi bhyo piradha kundam chasya munibir abitas tadrigeva vyadhayi yapreshtar apyalam asulabam kim punar bhakti bhajam tapremedam sakrit api sarasnatur avishkaroti. Of the many objects of favored delight and of all the lovable damsels of Brajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love, and in every respect her divine kunda is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kunda is very rarely attained, even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love for Krishna is fully aroused. And now we're going to look at the Sri Ishupanishad. And you'll find it in this blue book. For convenience, the shlokas are all contained here. And we can hear the shlokas of the Sri Ishupanishad. You find it under the pink tab. Blue book, pink tab. Om Purnam Mada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachite Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate Ishavasyam Midam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyak Tena Bunjita Magridha Kasya Swidhanam Kurvaneveha Karmani Jijivishakshatam Samaha Evam Tvai Nanyate Tosti Nakarma Lipite Nare Asurya Namate Loka Antena Tamasavritaha Tamste Pratya Bigachanti Yeke Chatma Hanojanaha Ane Jade Kam Manaso Javiyo Naina Deva Apnuvan Purvanarshat Tadavato Nyanateti Tishtat Tashmina Poma Tarishva Tadati Tadejati Tadnaijati Tadure Tadvantike Tarantarasya Sarvasya Taru Sarvasya Sibayataha Yastu Sarvani Bhutani Atmani Vanupashyati Sarva Bhuteshu Chatmanam Tato Na Vijagupsate Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmai Vadbud Vijanataha Tatra Komohakashoka Ekatvam Manupashyataha Saparya Jakshukram Akayam Avranam Asnaviram Shutam Apapavidham Kavir Manishi Pariyabhu Swayambhur Yatatyatyatortan Vyaradashasvati Bhyasamabhyaha Andam Tama Pravishanti Ye Vidyam Upasate Tato Puya Ivate Tamo Ya Uvidyayam Vrataha Anya Devahur Vidyaya Anyadahura Vidyaya Iti Shushumatiranam Yenastad Vijichakshade Vidyam cha yas tadvedo bayam saha avidyayam ratum tirtva vidyayam ratum ashnute andantama pravishanti yesambhuti mupasate tato puya ivate tamo ya usambhutyam rataha anyadevahu sambhavad anyadahura sambhavad Iti shushu madhiranam yenasta vichichakshire sambutim cha vinasham cha
yastad vedo bayam saha vina shenam ratum tirtva sambutyam ratum ashnute hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukam tatvam pushan apavrenu satyadharmaya drishtaye pushan nikarshe yama surya prajapatya vyuharashmin samuha tejo yate rupam kalyanatamam tate pashami yosavaso purushaso masmi vayur anilam amritam atedam bashmantam shariram om kratos mara kritam smara kratos mara kritam smara agne naya supataraya asman vishvani deva vayunani vidvan Yuyod yasmash juharana meno huishtam te nama uktim vidhema.
And now let's read the translations together. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is a complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains a complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain, he surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Only one who can learn the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter to the darkest region of ignorance and still more so to the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe,
O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so they can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, likened to the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes. Let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices. Because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so there will be no hindrance to my progress. Sri Shapanishad Sampurnam. So, Isha means the controller. Krishna is the supreme controller, and everyone else is controlled by him. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eka bahunam yovidatati kaman means that there's one supreme eternal and there's a plurality of eternals who are maintained by that one supreme eternal. In the eighth verse of the Sri Shapanishad, it mentions that the personality of Godhead is maintaining or fulfilling all the desires of the living entities. And that means we're not independent. We're not able to separately fulfill our desires. Also, nothing belongs to us. Sri Shapanishad points out, tena tyak tena bunjita. There's a quota that we have that's just set aside for us by the Lord. And if we accept that and use it in his service and understand where everything has come from, that it's come from the personality of Godhead, then we can go on living for many hundreds of years without incurring karma, without becoming entangled in this world. Kurvan eveha karmani jijivishek shatam samaha evam twai nanyatetosina karma lipyate nare. For such a person who lives in that conception, he or she is not bound by the law of karma, doesn't become more and more entangled in this world. So the overall sense from Sri Ishapanishad is that God is a person and he's supplying all the necessities for everyone else. He's the source of all energies. And by remembering that Krishna is a person, that God's a person, then we'll be properly directed. This is our compass, actually, to remember the personality of Godhead. By remembering that God is a person, then everything becomes adjusted. Our activities, our consciousness become satisfied. Without that conception, then there's not complete satisfaction. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas toyasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya aruya krichchena paramparam tata patantyata yushmad angraya. Patantyata yushmad angraya. That there's a sense of this in this verse that unless one knows the personality, this is the source of all the other aspects of everything. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that brahmano hi pratishtaham, that the brahman effulgence, the light that many yogis are enamored of, who meditate on and try to enter into that light, that's coming from Krishna. And the paramatma, the supersoul, Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita about how the supersoul, ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesher junatistiti, that localized aspect of Krishna who follows the living entity even into the material world, accompanies him, fulfilling his desire, observing him, just like two birds on a tree. One's the eating bird, one's the enjoying bird. So the soul is the eating bird in the sense that he's trying to enjoy the fruits in this material world. There are three flavors, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and many mixtures of those types of modes. Trying to enjoy those is the occupation of the eating bird. However, there's no satisfaction in that until the Upanishads say that eating bird turns his attention back to the witnessing bird. And so Krishna is that witnessing bird who actually follows us everywhere. Sukrit, he's the great friend of the soul, actually. There's an intimate and eternal relationship. And the source of both that witnessing bird and the Brahman effulgence, which actually maintains everything, yasya prabha prabhapato jagadanda koti koti shrisheshu vasudari vibhuti bhinam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami, which Brahma speaks about this all-pervading effulgence, the energy of God, which is everywhere. It's maintaining all life, and everything can take its creation from this. We have example, especially this time of the year. I look at my garden, and everything's sleeping. All the buds, everything is going dormant. It's cold, and the sun is reduced, and so it's sleeping. But in about a month, when the sun is noticeably coming back, immediately all the buds start to open. That, just think about it, the rays of the sun, what is that? That energy that's coming from there, it wakes everything up. Everything takes birth out of that, from that energy, from the sun. All, the whole food chain is energized and is coming from the energy of the sun. So similarly, everything in creation is taking place because of the effulgence of Krishna. And that, Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. That's coming from me. That's my emanation. It's the basis of it is me. So when one gets the personality of Godhead, means Yene Ravindaksha, the lotus-eyed Lord, he's a person. And as mentioned in the Sri Upanishad also, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasa Pihitam Mukham. Mukham means face. One time when Prabhupada had just made sannyasis, and some of them had gone to South India, and they were just kids, really, just learned the philosophy a little bit, and they were off to conquer these, you know, pundits down in South India who knew Sanskrit and everything. So at one such debate, which took place, there was a great pundit debating with one of the Prabhupada's new sannyasis who was just in his 20s. And the Shirish Upanishad had come out, and he had memorized the verses in the Shirish Upanishad. And so they were having a public debate, and the sannyasi actually defeated this great pundit, who was a Mayavadi, and he was trying to say that God had no form. And this devotee remembered this verse, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasa Pitha Mukham. And he said, Mukham. Mukham means face. He said, how can you say that God's impersonal? It says right here, this is Upanishad. It's Shruti. We have Shruti, not Smriti, Shruti, because they will only accept the Shruti. He said, face. It says face. And everyone in the crowd said, yes, yes, it says face. So he won that argument and that debate publicly because he had remembered this verse. And the essence of it is that God has a face. Yene Ravindaksha means he has beautiful lotus eye. There's a description of him, what he looks like, how he moves, what his particular characteristics are and qualities. And by learning those, by understanding those things, and meditating on the personality of Godhead, then one actually enters into stable spiritual life. Otherwise, Bhagavatam says, one's spiritual life is not entirely stable. Whatever kind of situation I'm in, lacking the reciprocation with the personality of God, I will not be satisfied. This is the idea. I seek satisfaction. I have to have satisfaction. I'm an energy of God, and my nature is to seek satisfaction and to find pleasure. And I was thinking about it today when I was in San Francisco. I was watching people, and I was watching somebody walking their dog, and I was thinking that it's nice to have a dog. Dogs are they're friendly animals. You know, when you come home, they come to see you. You know, it's like, hi, good to see you. And actually, I was watching one person walking their dog and thinking, like, I don't know anything about the person, obviously, I'm only speculating, but I was thinking, it could be that that's their best friend, and they don't have anybody else. And but it can only come from a living entity. If that dog was dead and just stuffed by a taxidermist, at home, it wouldn't be the same. have a stuffed dog. You got to have a live dog, a dog that can come up and say, "Hi, how are you?" Because in that there's reciprocation. So the supreme reciprocation comes sanitya nitya sammanda prakritischa paraivasa. There's that eternal reciprocation and kinship between the Lord and the living entity, which Prabhupada describes in many places as being very intimate. There's an intimate association with the personality of Godhead. So Sri Upanishad is inviting us to come to this relationship, to come closer, to reestablish that a relationship with the personality of Godhead. And by fortifying our intelligence and our determination to know him and to reawaken that relationship, we enter into the positive aspect of spiritual life, which is this very thing, reawakening our relationship with the personality of Godhead. And then that's a matter of how to do that. There are various processes in yoga. And specifically the process of bhakti leads one to this personal relationship with God. There are other processes which lead one to understand his impersonal aspect. But bhakti particularly, it stimulates and reawakens our original love for God. Prabhude jnana bhakti vyam atmayananda chinmayi. Prabhude bhakti, where am I? Prabhude jnana bhakti vyam atmayananda chinmayi. Ude tinutama bhaktir bhagavat prema lakshana. Means that there's an awakening of that original love, which is naturally there. That's why I can have love for all kinds of other things, other kinds of living entities, right? There's sneha, there's affection that every living being has for others. For instance, Prabhupada gave an example. One time he was sitting in his room in Radha Damodar when he was writing his books, and there was a mother monkey, a monkey mother, outside his window with a little baby, who Prabhupada called a kitty. It was a kid, had a little kitty. So the baby got through the bars, but the mother couldn't come through the bars. And the mother, he said, went crazy because she thought, he'll never come back. I've lost him for good. And she practically went mad until Prabhupada was able to guide the little baby monkey back through the bars, and then she was satisfied again. So this is sneha. It's affection. It's there in every living entity. So in Queen Kunti's prayers, she's praying that let that kind of affection that's naturally there in my heart be reawakened. Let it flow towards Krishna fully, just like the Ganges is flowing to the ocean. It can't be stopped. It comes with such force. Nothing can stop it. You can dam it up. It'll go around the dam. It'll seep through. It'll come to the ocean. So similarly, our bhakti, when reawakened, but through the process of sadhana bhakti, it will reawaken and it will flow towards Krishna in its natural way. And so Sri Upanishad is such a literature that by hearing it regularly, it will remind us of the supreme personality of Godhead, even from the very first verse in the invocation. Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vishichate. It's speaking of the supreme perfect person who's the source of everything. In fact, I would argue that that's what everyone's looking for. Everyone's looking for that supreme perfect person. When we were at the Supreme Court today, fourth time I've mentioned it, one of our attorneys who was arguing the case was talking about how at LAX airport there's paparazzi all over the place. He was making this argument. It's a public place. I mean, people come out there, and there's in Los Angeles, you know what paparazzi are, right? They're these people they make their living by taking picture of movie stars or famous people, and then they sell them for tens of thousands of dollars. So they hide all over Los Angeles, or not even hide, they're just out in the open, they follow people around, take pictures. So they practically, you know, permeate the airport there because famous people fly in and out and they take pictures of them. And people just want to have a look. They want to have a look and see a picture of somebody who's famous, right? They'll pay, sometimes they take a picture, one good picture by a paparazzi, they can earn, you know,
$300,000, $500,000 for one shot. Kishore? You might want to think about and so everyone's looking for that perfect person. And then it's not there in the famous people we meet in this world, but it is there in Krishna. So by remembering him, that he's the supreme perfect person, we'll find satisfaction, and our mind will become attracted, and that's where we can take shelter. So we can move up about 7.2 inches, because it's going to start to get crowded. And now we want to hear from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And in the Bhagavad Gita, we're in the 9th chapter. We're on text number 22. It's on page 426. All say, please repeat. Ananyaschintayanto mam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabdi yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham ananyaschintayanto mam Yejana paryupasate tesham nityabdi yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. Translation: but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So there's a but at the beginning of this verse. And going back to the last few verses, last couple of verses, Krishna is speaking, and he says on text 20, those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, sinking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. Text 21, when they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. So, here Krishna is speaking about this material process that's within the three modes of material nature, which is what most of the Vedas speak about, Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistraigunya Babarjana. So the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. And there's a way in which those who become enamored of material enjoyment can follow the practices of the Karmakanda sections of the Vedas and elevate themselves materially. But these verses point out that even though one may elevate oneself materially for some time, that person will use up the sukriti or the pious credits that he or she has gained and then fall back down again. And so this cycle is repeatedly going on, enjoying, then suffering. And one perpetually goes on this wheel of chapala sukha, flickering happiness, and bogan tyag, sometimes renouncing, sometimes trying to enjoy, and sometimes being up and sometimes being down. So in this verse that we're reading, number 22, Krishna says, but those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshiping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization,
so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Shema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life. So the direct process of worshiping Krishna is called Bhakti Yoga or the Bhagavat Marg. And by the process of beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord, we directly connect to the personality of Godhead. And the process is described in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam to be so secure that if one runs with one's eyes closed on the path of bhakti, the direct process of worshiping the Lord through Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc., one will never trip and fall. Because this is a process, especially hearing about Krishna, mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second verse, that when one hears about Krishna, especially from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna becomes attracted to the vibration himself. And as mentioned there in that verse, he becomes situated within the heart, or he doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to leave your heart. So the goal of life is pointed out in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is to please the personality of Godhead. And when one pleases the personality of Godhead, then all things become possible. And as parts and parcels of Krishna, when Krishna becomes pleased, I also become pleased. Just like when we water the root of a tree, automatically the leaves and branches become satisfied. We don't need to do anything extraneous besides satisfy Krishna. If I concentrate on satisfying Krishna, then automatically I'll become satisfied. And if I concentrate on satisfying myself and I don't satisfy Krishna, there's no way I'll ever become satisfied. I'll wander throughout the material creation, sometimes in abundance and sometimes I'll be lacking, but I'll never become satisfied. But by the simple process of remembering Krishna through the process of Shravanam Kirtanam, and then remembering Krishna after hearing and chanting, Krishna becomes inclined toward the devotee. He actually becomes compact within the heart. And from that, the devotee gets all direction, and Krishna removes the unwanted obstacles from within the heart of the devotee. So this verse is a very key verse, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam, to fix one's mind on Krishna, and the process for doing that is mentioned also in the purport, Shravanam Kirtanam. By hearing about Krishna, then naturally I'll remember Krishna, and I'll also speak about Krishna. So one who has heard properly can also then speak about Krishna. And one who hears and speaks about Krishna then will remember Krishna. And this verse says, by remembering Krishna, then Krishna gives special protection and consideration to the devotee. This is the process of direct devotional service mentioned by Krishna in this 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This middle section of the Bhagavad Gita is particularly important. It's all about devotional service. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they're just like in your house, if you hide some money, sometimes you hide it in a book. So you put it in the middle of the book, close it up. It's there in the middle. So the middle section of the Bhagavad Gita, the middle 6 chapters are particularly the treasure of Bhagavad Gita because they speak about bhakti. And this verse is particularly important. It's very similar to the verse Shraddha Shabde Vishraskai Suridhan Nishtray Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hoy, which says that faith means to understand that by engaging in devotional service, then all other things will come automatically. We don't need to do other things extraneously. Yes. Can we pass her the microphone?
I don't remember the Sanskrit, but there's one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that remembering, how Adiguru and Vaishnava can remove all obstacles.
Yes, and there's another one that says, when one remembers Lord Chaitanya, then difficult things become easy. And when one forgets Lord Chaitanya, then easy things become difficult. So we heard from the Shastra, the Upadeshamrita, coming from Rupa Goswami, then we heard from Sri Ishupanishad. And now we've heard one verse from the Gita Upanishad. And now we have a question from Bhakta Zo. Are you about to ask something?
I actually have lots of questions. But one question, I was approached by somebody that studies a lot of scriptures, and they say they don't believe in reincarnation. So many things they believe in from reading the scriptures, but they don't believe in reincarnation. Prove to me there's reincarnation.
Well, at one time you had a baby body, and now you have a grown-up body. So the definition of reincarnation, karna means flesh. Flesh is changing. And you can see it. You can see that you had a young body, and now that you have an old body. So you've reincarnated already. So reincarnation is apparent before our very eyes. We've seen already. Where's Driti? Is she still here? Driti's reincarnated. She's, you know, she was a little tiny baby. We could see her features practically, and now, you know, she's got a new body. Her body's constantly being reincarnated. Gita Priya's here, has got a new body from what we saw when she was just a little baby. I mean, it's right before our eyes to see. So this change of bodies is what Krishna describes as reincarnation. Dehino smin yata dehe komaran yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir tiras tatana namuyati. It's from boyhood to youth to old age, we can see the change of body. And you can observe it in yourself.
But how is that proven at the time of death you get another body?
Well, it's logical that if you had a past, you have a present, and you have a future now, that you also have a future, you know, when you leave this body. And the proof is Krishna. He tells us in the Bhagavad Gita about the transmigration of the soul. He says, Ukramantam stitam vapi bhunchanam bhagunan vitam. That once you leave this body, you step out of it, basically. You step out of this body into another body. There's lots of empiric evidence also. You can observe yourself how you're separate from the body when you sleep. Sometimes when you lightly sleep, you can actually, when you just doze or you're having a nap in the afternoon, you can have the experience yourself of seeing how just as you're awakening that you're separate from your body. The subtle body has a separation from the body. Or when you dream at night, the body's asleep. It's inactive except for the respiratory system's working and the involuntary muscles are going. But you're separate from it. You can observe how you're separate from it. So through observation, you can see. And through Shastra, you can also back that up. And when you watch somebody die, it becomes very apparent also. They go through this process where they die. Unless they die by some accident or something, people actually, one minute they're there, and the next minute they're gone. Ukramantam stitam vapi. They step out of their body. And then Krishna says, Shariram yadavapnoti yachchap ukramatishvara grihit vaitani samnyati vayurghanam vashayat shotram chakshu sparshanam cha grahanam eva rasanam eva cha dishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. That just as air crosses over a certain area and it picks up the scent of that area. So similarly, when we leave the body, we carry our consciousness is like that scent. It carries us to a next body, which is custom made for our consciousness. What is it? It's a shotram chakshu sparshanam cha, naming all the senses. What is the body? It's made of senses. It's a custom made body. It didn't happen by chance. You can't create things by chance. They don't, even try to do it not by chance. Create one body that, from a test tube. Create one egg or make one mosquito or one blade of grass. You can't do it. It's arranged by material nature. And the soul leaves the present body, goes into the next body according to the arrangement of Daiva or supreme arrangement. I was thinking about this today. fifth time I'm going to mention being at the Supreme Court. I was a lot of realization. Sitting there in the audience, and I was thinking, boy, I wonder what it's like, you know, being before Yamaraj. Because there's, it, you know, it's an absolute thing. And somebody's going to make a decision, and then that's it. You know, once you come to the Supreme Court, they say it, and that's it. And this is the appellate court, too. So it's, you know, this is the last stage. And, you know, the decision is made. There's higher authority. And you feel a little bit, you know, intimidated, helpless. They make you feel like that, too, because they sit way up there. And they walk in, please, everyone rise, you know, and you stand up. And it, there's a respect that goes on in the universe, too. That's not just in human society, but it's everywhere. We are controlled. And there is a way in which there's a superior authority that decides when we leave this body. So Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shruti Pratyakshamaityam Anumanam Chatushtayam, that Pramana Anavastana Vikalpatsa Virajite. There's four different ways that you can understand knowledge. One is by direct experience for yourself, and I've been just talking about that. Another is from pranam. Praman, which means scriptural evidence. You have to take an authority somewhere. Your friend is studying Shastra, but there's some disconnect. He's missing something, you know, that he's not understanding. But you take Shastric evidence. When Krishna says he's the authority, he says this is what happens, then you can accept that, even if you can't see it with your eyes. There are many examples of this we have in daily life. We take the authority to understand what's going on with things because we can't see it with our eyes. Just like right now, there's radio waves going through this room. Can you see them? No. You can't see them, but you know they're there. If you turn on a radio, then you'll be able to perceive them and you'll understand them. If you study the science, and scientists can tell you a little bit about what the radio wave is, and then you can understand through that praman that, you know, that they write in the textbook exactly how it works and that it's there. And many other unseen things that have been studied and are not perceivable by the senses, we can understand from a superior authority. So to understand the subtle body and the soul and its workings and its movings, we take the authority of Bhagavad Gita. What better authority is there? And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about this. So that's number two. Number three kind of evidence, Krishna says, anuman, or logical deduction. And number four is traditional wisdom, how this it's passed down. So there are different ways to understand knowledge and to understand how we're changing bodies. You can see for yourself. You can hear from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's direct words. You can take the praman and understand how these things are taking place, the change of bodies. And you know, someone may say, I don't believe that fire burns. So, fine. That doesn't mean it won't burn you if you touch the fire. And similarly, we're moving from one body to the next. We are reincarnating, whether we like it or not. And we will leave this body at the time of death. There's no choice in the matter. You can't stay. You can't stay in the body. Yes.
Hear me?
Yes.
Just a week ago, I got an email from Gandharvika Radha. Exactly the same questions what he had asked as being asked by Dr. Singh to Swami Prabhupada. Uh-huh. And every question that he asked, as answers as given by Swami Prabhupada is there. I can probably forward it to him.
Yeah, the book called Life Comes from Life?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's an excellent book. You can get a hold of that. Life Comes from Life. Probably gives us these answers.
Yeah, it's very commonsensical. It's arranged in such kind of a debate, like, you know, mm-hmm. somebody asking a question.
Yeah.
Prabhuji answering that, and they're counter-arguing, and then a proper reply given. The same questions, exactly in the same sequence as he has asked you. I have received the mail, so I can forward it.
There you go.
The only thing that was missing was you interpolated that with the slokas, with the Sanskrit slokas in between, as told by Krishna. That is what was missing in that mail. So probably they just put only the purport form and not the the actual Krishna's sayings.
Thank you.
Yeah, one more.
Can you please expand on, I read where we're not the doer, so the activities are taking place, our activities from karma and the modes of material nature, as all our activities are taking place. Is that correct?
Yes.
We're actually not doing anything. We're forced to do it.
So you want to answer this?
I think I'll let Christian answer it. Let's look at chapter 13, verse 34. No, verse 19. Chapter 14, verse 19.
There's some space over here.
619 page. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drishtan upashati gunebhyas chaparam veti madbhavam so vigachati. One who properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. So even reading this verse, it's still difficult to understand, right? Because we do think we are the doer of activities. Because we're identified with the mind, material mind, and the physical body through the false ego, we're thinking, I am this body, I am this mind. And we're thinking that we're making decisions to do things. But if we observe, as Krishna says, when you reach the point of realization where you understand you're not the body, and when you understand you're not the mind, then you'll see that actually you're not doing anything, that everything is scripted, basically, and by the modes of material nature. And it's like going into a movie. When we go into a movie, we're watching the movie, we're watching the actors, we forget all about ourselves, and we identify with the characters in the movie. And we begin to experience their fear. We begin to experience their happiness. And we're lost into the movie. And in that state of unconsciousness, we're thinking we're part of the movie. But actually, we're not. As soon as we wake up and see that, therefore, Krishna says that one who can actually see this, he attains my nature. But one who doesn't see that, then he thinks he's the doer. And so basically, just to get a more practical example, you're a musician, right? And you're playing different songs, and you're on stage, and your body and your mind are doing so many different activities. And you may have certain likes and dislikes. You like certain songs. Certain other songs maybe have become boring to you. But these are all just reactions that are going on in the mind. And the self is identified with the mind, thinking, that I'm becoming bored. Or I'm enjoying this song. Or now I'm angry. But we don't say, I feel angry, usually. Or we don't usually say, I feel bored. We say, I am bored. I am angry. So there's an identification with the mind, which is experiencing these likes and dislikes. And so we're assuming we're the doer through identification, but actually it's not the fact. When one wakes up, one sees that. And when one is sleeping, then one is under the impression that he's the doer. But actually it's just due to one's past attachments and aversions under the influence of the three modes of material nature that's deciding and doing things, actually. And as long as we're, to the degree that we're identified with our with this conditioning that we have, to that degree we really are not deciding anything. We're just following the program. It's like a computer with the software. And the software is programmed to do a certain thing, and it does it. There's really no decisions being made at all. It's just going on automatically, unconsciously. So to the degree that we're conscious, to that degree we can make a decision and have an influence. But to the degree that we're unconscious, then we're just following the script. And the script is just doing its thing, and we're thinking, I'm making a decision. I'm deciding to do this. But really, it's just the modes doing it. Is that okay?
What about in Krishna consciousness, though? What about when we start performing Krishna conscious activities? Does Krishna have us surpass the modes of material nature?
Well, thank you. In the second to the last verse of this chapter, actually, Arjuna asked Krishna, he says, well, what are the symptoms? You know, what is somebody like who's transcended the modes of material nature, and how does he do it? So why don't we read those verses? So I think that starts. Start with Arjuna's question. Page 622. Wow, I was way off. So, on page 621, Arjuna says, Arjuna Vacha, Karalingas Trin Gunanetam. Atito bhavati prabho kim achara katam chantim trin guna ativartate. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of material nature? And Krishna replies from text 22 to text 25, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prakasam cha pravitam cha moham eva cha pandava nadeshtvi samprave pravitani navritani kanshati udasina varasino gunaryo na vichayate gunavartanta ityevam Yovashish hati nangate sama dukkha sukha swasta sama lashtam ma kanchana tuya priyo priyo diras tuyo nindatma samstuti mana praman nayos tuyas tuyo mitari prakasyo sarva ramba parityagi gunatita sa uchate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now remember, Arjuna is asking, what are the symptoms of someone who has transcended the modes and how does he do it? So here are the symptoms. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present. See, no attachment or aversion. Or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. You just imagine you're in the movie and you're watching the movie, but there's no reaction to it. There's no identification with it. You're equal. You're not attached. You're not averted. You're not happy. You're not sad. You're just watching. That's how Krishna is explaining. One who has transcended the modes, this is his experience. Remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self, and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of material nature. And how does he do it? And Krishna says in verse 26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatetya ityan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of the Brahman. So I think this verse particularly answers your question.
I'd like to enter another verse into evidence, and that is the third chapter, 28th verse. And 28 and 29 go well together as contrasting verses. 28, Tattvavittu mahabaho gunakarma vibhagayoho guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajyate. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruit of result. And the purport is specifically illuminating about how when one comes to Krishna consciousness, he's acting in such a way that he's not controlled by the modes of material nature. The next verse, bewildered by the modes of nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached, but the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. So, Prabhupada was once talking about this control of the modes of material nature that Satyadev Prabhu was bringing up, and he said that when you become a dog, then you'll bark. No question about it. That's what dogs do. As soon as you get a dog's body by the control of material nature, then you bark. So if you get any kind of body born of the material modes of nature, you act according to that body. But there's an awakening of one's intelligence in Krishna consciousness that is mentioned in the verse Kama Dinam Katina Katida Palita Durnideshas, in which the author of the verse says, Labdha Buddhi, that I've regained my intelligence, and that intelligence is spiritual intelligence to engage in Krishna's service, not engage in the activities of sense gratification or to go along with what's inherent in the body. He says, for how long and how many ways have I served the bad masters of the senses for how many lifetimes? They've never given me a reprieve, and they've never given me mercy, and they've never given me any kind of advantage in life. They've only taken from me. So this is the control the soul is under in the modes of material nature. But by the mercy of a devotee, one can reawaken one's intelligence, one's spiritual intelligence, called Labdha Buddhi. Then one's desire impetus is completely different in life, and that is the author of the verse says, now I desire to engage in some personal service to the Lord. And this is actually free life. When one makes the conscious decision that I want to engage in the service of the Lord, he's no longer controlled by the modes of material nature. And that's the essence of this verse, Tattvavittu mahabaho guna karma vibhagayo guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajite. When one becomes tattvavit, he becomes a knower of the truth, then he sees the difference between sense gratification, or that which is being carried on by the body, and engagement in devotional service. And for one who's choosing to engage in devotional service, he enters into liberated life even from the very beginning. The devotee who has full determination to engage in devotional service, that's his desire, even if still in the material body. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira Nikilap apyavastasu jivan mukta su uchite. He's called the jivan mukta. He's called a liberated person because even in this body, although it still appears to be a body that's made up of the modes of material nature, because all his activities are now engaged, his senses are engaged in devotional service, he becomes a liberated person. He's no longer acting for sense gratification, but for Krishna service. Hare Krishna. Yes. This is the first time you've asked a question in this. Well, this is. Oh, well, this is exciting.
You just said that whatever decisions we take are already there. The script has already been made, right? So in that case, I mean, like, if the decisions are already there, like, suppose, I'm not a good person. Like, I'm a thief. If I, rob somebody, so are the decisions only made that I'm not a sinner, right?
Well, the soul is never, as Krishna, again, he explains in the 13th chapter, the soul actually never mixes with the modes of nature. But as long as we're identified with it, then we follow the script. And therefore, the script continues. So in that sense, you're a sinner. You know, as long as you continue to identify with the script and as long as you energize it, it will keep going on. And that aspect will transmigrate from body to body and continue the script. So the more conscious we are, the more we're awake we are, or the more, we decide to follow Krishna or follow the super soul as opposed to our senses, then we get freed of that script and we no longer follow it. So as long as we're following the script, then we're bound in it. And we're bound to experience the script and whatever's happening in that script, or the movie, or the imaginary self, the person we imagine we think we are, will continue to, be that imaginary actor in the play, and experience their sorrows, and experience their happiness, and experience their sufferings, even though the soul always is transcendental at the same time. Does that make any sense? So it's just like if you're addicted to smoking, right? And you see a cigarette and there's a response, the script is responding, oh, I want to have, I want to taste that. And then we do it. And it's almost automatic. There's no thinking. There's hardly any thinking about it. It's just an unconscious response that we're following. But, you still have to suffer the results. You get cancer and you die, or you get emphysema and you suffocate for 10 years until you finally you die.
To be a good person, suppose my script has, I have to, like you said, I have to rob somebody or I have to kill somebody. So if my script says so, if I don't follow that, I have to break the chain or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
So I have to break the chain, break the God's will, in other words, because who has written the script?
You have written the script.
We write the script.
Yeah, every time you have a sense impression, right? Something comes in your senses, it makes a little picture, you look at that picture and you think, that's me, okay? Whatever, say you like chocolate, right? You see some chocolate and you get an image, some chocolate, and then there's a memory picture comes up in your brain, a little pleasure center in the brain is stimulated. How nice it was when the last time you tasted chocolate. And then you follow that. Unconsciously or consciously, you follow that. Every time you do that, you keep the script going. You're the one who's making You're not really making the choice because you're unconscious. But once you become conscious and you notice that the senses are acting, the mind is acting, and you start to see that you're not the senses and you're not the mind, then you don't have to follow the script anymore. Then you change it. But as long as you remain unconscious, as long as you continue to act, then the conditioning will continue. So you're writing the script. Krishna's not writing the script. The demigods aren't writing the script. Each one of us is writing the script, and we're following it. And that continues until we wake up, until we begin to follow the spiritual master in Krishna. Then the script will change, and then you become free of the script. You don't look satisfied.
Actually, I had asked the same question to General Nemasku one time, and he gave me a very good answer. He said that if you are driving drunk, at that time you don't have any control of your senses. So it's like a script. But at some point in time, you had decided to get drunk. So that decision you made, so now that you don't have senses and you are basically acting unconsciously, is basically of a decision that you made sometime prior. So that's, I think, what you're saying about the script that you write and you follow that.
Sukeshwari.
As I understand, so people who are Krishna conscious can actually change their karma. I mean, karma is more depending on the script, right? Like, I have to have this, I have to have that. But people, when they become Krishna conscious, they can actually change their karma and, you know, just go against all those astrological calculations and reach Krishna. Is that right?
Yeah, just like, for example, as soon as you begin to decide that you're going to follow the four regulator principles, you know, your script up until that point has been to break all the regulator principles. But that's why they're called the regulator principles of freedom. And so there was a point where you didn't understand that, and you were just following the script. But there's a point where, like Prabhu was saying, that you become love the Buddha, or you're transcendental intelligence awakens, and then you can make a decision and change it. And as soon as we begin to see that we're not the body and we're not the mind, and we begin to see the script, then we can change it. And we don't, because we're no longer following it. We're no longer energizing it. We're unplugging the fan. So eventually, the momentum's gonna slow down and stop.
You had a point?
The case of following the script would be tantamount to not utilizing one's intelligence, it would seem, because Krishna gives the hierarchy in the Bhagavad Gita that you have the senses, the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and the intelligence is able to control the mind. So if that is not exercised, then one is going with the script. But the moment one exercises that intelligence to control the mind, then the script should be under control.
Of course, Arjuna says, you know, to Krishna, he says, you know, even though we know we shouldn't do something, we do it anyway. So, you know, what is that? And then Krishna says, it's lust. And then he explains, you know, how to transcend that. So even intelligence is not enough. You know, ultimately, we require the vision, our spiritual vision, to awaken, and we need the power of God to support us.
So would you say spiritual intelligence?
Yeah.
Some acharyas also talk about the awakening of spiritual intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, seeing, you know, it's a matter of light and dark. I mean, when it gets, you make totally simplify it, there's consciousness and unconsciousness. When you become conscious, then you no longer do things that are detrimental to yourself. As long as you're unconscious, then you continue to do things that, you know, will hurt yourself. But as long as once you see that it's not beneficial, then you'll stop. Or once you know that the fire is hot, you'll stop putting your hand in it.
Yes. I don't think that's on. Still not on. Now it's on.
To this topic with the script. So we will follow the script as long as we will follow our mind, and our intelligence is very weak. So if we will accept a higher authority, Shastras and Guru, this is the only way we can change our karma, because we will not follow our route, our astrological route. We will just change. We will be in the situation, in a difficult situation. We will ask Shastra and we will ask Guru what to do, and we will follow. And this will change our karma, because our intelligence is not enough to change our karma. Is this right?
Yes. Krishna says, Brahma says, Yastvindra gopa matavindra mahosa karma bandhanu rupa palabhajana matanoti karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. That this karma, which is we've had since the beginning of this time, becomes eradicated when one engages in bhakti. And bhakti is initiated by one's following Guru and Krishna. Ramanda Brahmate Kun Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Somebody who's wandering aimlessly in the universe, being forced by karma, has the good fortune of coming in contact with Guru and Krishna. One gets Krishna by Guru, and one gets a Guru by Krishna's arrangement. And then, yes, karma is the one aspect which is not eternal. It will be terminated by engaging Krishna's service. Really, the sin is forgetting Krishna. That's the difficulty. You know, the light is Krishna. Maya Surya Sama, Mayaya Andhakara. And Maya is darkness. It's just a matter if we've turned away from Krishna. Once we've turned towards Krishna, then there's no more darkness. And I thought it was a very important point Prabhu brought out, that we're responsible. This is Krishna brings us out in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that we are responsible for our karma. It's not that it's been imposed upon us by somebody else. But as soon as I take the responsibility that I've created the situation that I'm in, then there's a possibility of getting out of it. Can you pass the mic down to Vijay Mataji, please? Hare Krishna.
Soul is by nature, it is very interested in serving the Lord, and it has the intelligence that super soul is Lord Krishna, and it has to serve him for the whole of his or her lifetime. But once it gets into contact with the material nature, it gets contaminated and it starts listening to the mind. So that way we accumulate karma, and that is the reason we fall into karmic reactions. But once we ourselves separate from the materialistic body, and if a person realizes that soul is a part and parcel of Lord Krishna and starts serving, automatically we can minus the karma.
Simple. Thank you. makes life easier. There's a couple of verses that you can take home with you in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 14 and 15, on page 256 and 257. Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya surjati prabhu nakarmapala samyogam subhavastu pravartate. Krishna says, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. 15. Nadate kashyachit papam nachayva sukritam vibhu agnyanenavritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. text 16. Gyanena tutadagyanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham adityavajjnanam prakashayati tatparam. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nations are destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Simple. This verse from the Bhagavatam, Payam Dvitiya Abhinibeshita Syad Ishad Apetasya Viparya Yosmiti. He was taught by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami, and he said much what Vijay Mataji was just saying, that the soul becomes, soul is an eternal servitor of the Lord, but he becomes turned around. He gets in a reversed condition. Instead of being the eternal servitor of Krishna, he becomes Krishna's competitor. Not a good idea. And then fear arises. So then the solution, Ishadape tasya viparya yosmiti, tanmaya tad buddha abhajet tan pakyaika yesham guru devatatma. He should put his full attention back towards Krishna, and that rectifies everything. Then the situation becomes rectified. How we became unrectified, that's another class, which we can go on till midnight talking about. But the fact is that we're in the situation now, and to rectify it, one turns towards Krishna, and the light of Krishna gives us, lights up our pathway. And he also takes away our karma and directs us on his own path towards him. He's just waiting for us to turn around to see him, and he'll give us all help and support from within the heart. And externally, he gives support also. Help is there. But we must accept that responsibility, that whatever situation I'm in, I can rectify it, because somehow or other it's due to my own ignorance, my own activity. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Now we have a offering ceremony. We've been on a marathon for the last 2 months, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books with the largest goal we've had in the history of ISV, which was to distribute 20,000 books during the end of the year marathon. And all the devotees here at ISV, directly or indirectly, were involved in this Herculean task of distributing all these books. I dare say that we'll never be the same after this, because somehow we've expanded our capabilities, we've stretched ourselves past what we thought we could do, and now I think everyone feels it. There's been an expansion of our consciousness and our feeling of what we can do here at ISV, because we literally doubled it, more than we'd ever done before. At least I feel like that. It's an amazing feeling. I thank all of you very much. It's been two of the best months I think I've ever had here at ISV, being together with everyone, seeing how everyone worked together, and I never heard anybody complain. Everyone was working tirelessly, even on their I don't know if anybody ever took any time off during this whole last couple of months, but devotees were working, going to school, and then using all their spare time simply to go out and distribute books. So our custom here and our tradition is, this is our yajna, our main yajna, is distributing the holy names. Our mission at ISV is to serve all living beings by widely distributing the holy name of the Lord. Because this is the only thing that which can help one, can liberate one from this situation of ignorance. So following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, we've taken up this task as their servant to help in distributing spiritual knowledge in written form, and also we go out to distribute the holy names by chanting. Srila Prabhupada asked us to do this, and we're carrying on his legacy by distributing his books widely. So our tradition is, after performing that yajna and reaching our goals, we take the results and we offer them to Srila Prabhupada and to their lordship Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan, Sriman Mahaprabhu, and Shri Shri Lakshmi Nisringadev. Because we're doing bhakti for bhakti. We're not going to keep the result. We're going to offer it back to them and thank them for the opportunity to engage in their service. So in this ceremony, we'll stand up, put all the books away, and then we can situate ourselves around Srila Prabhupada and the deities. And the voice of ISV, Rakshit Jariwala Prabhu, and our spokesperson, who offers the results at each and every festival, will then read out the results of our festival, offering them to the Lord and to Srila Prabhupada. And then just after that, we'll have kirtan and prasadam. So if we can all just put the books away as quickly as possible and then gather here around the Lord and Srila Prabhupada, we can do this straight away.